Class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, family. This is your brother, Imer Dees. And this is a Class War Battlefield podcast. Addendum. Now, I'm not sure if I'm going to addendum this for episode 2006.01 or episode 2006.02. So, whenever you get it, there you go. But it is an addendum. And it's an addendum which I've been mulling over in my mind for quite some time. Now, if you noticed the beginning of this addendum, of course, you did not see, or you did not hear, should I say, the barrage of clips, which I've been including over the last 3 or 4 or 5 episodes. And the reason is because the addendums will not be presented in that light. The addendums will always be commentary. It will be always me speaking about something directly related to the episode, or maybe even something completely different that happened, which I feel needs to be discussed. So this is one of those which is something that I feel needs to be discussed, and that is the Obama's administration, its complicity in a lot of things that are going on in the Middle East. I want to first start off by saying I think it's laughable that we continue to say presidential names and administrations. I think it's laughable because there is an apparatus in Washington which does not cohere to any administration. None. In fact, the last 2 administrations, maybe even 3, I prefer actually, I don't count the third one, but the last 2 administrations which may have been adversarial to this apparatus was JFK and FDR. Truman was not against this apparatus. Eisenhower was not against this apparatus. Indeed, under Eisenhower, this apparatus was built, and under Truman, it was built, and it was strengthened under both of them. Nixon was part of the apparatus, and if what is true, what has recently been revealed, well, not actually technically recently been revealed, but has been revealed to me, Nixon in 72, 73, started talking about something that had happened in the late 60s and in the early 60s, which he wanted to get to the bottom of. Part of that dealt with the JFK assassination. And part of it dealt with what some people suggest, was a sort of 60s October surprise, which if you do not know what the October surprise is, this is a moment where I'm telling you, stop it. Stop listening to this right now and go and look it up, because you'll then appreciate what I'm saying. But a sort of late 1960s October surprise where Lyndon B. Johnson was working in overdrive to establish a peace agreement with the Viet Cong, apparently to the military's chagrin, and the Republicans were working to actually undermine that peacekeeping effort, which is what they did in the Iran hostage situation, in order to keep Jimmy Carter from having that victory. Nixon apparently was getting a little restless about some of this and wanted to know how deep this went, and Watergate happened. Not saying that Nixon didn't deserve Watergate, there just seems to be some interconnectability there. Reagan and Carter. Carter wasn't against the establishment until late in his, or against this apparatus until late in his presidency, when there was a night where he just fired all of his advisors, all of them. And he then went down to defeat, of course, to Reagan. And most historians today want to say, oh, well, it was because he refused to participate in a couple of debates. He was acting all irrational. He was acting this. He was acting that. My perception of what Carter was doing is simply this. Carter knew that the system was rigged. He knew it. And he was attempting to mount an attack on that rigged system. So everything that he did was an attempt to stir the ship in a different way. Go back and listen to Carter's melee speech. It is an impressive piece of work and sounded more like a president who was trying to lift the country to a different vision than a president who a lot of these new conspiracists say, oh, well, he was in the pocket of the Illuminati, he was in the pocket of all of these secret societies, and thus, you know, everything that he did, you have to look through a lens of Jimmy Carter being just this horrible, evil guy. No. The way that the presidency worked after FDR was the first 4 years belonged to the masters who put you into the office, while the second 4 years, and if you look at this, if you look at the campaigns, particularly in the last 30 years, minus Reagan, you'll see a lot of candidates talking like there's work to still be done. That's because the original agreement was supposed to be the first four belonged to the masters, the second four belonged to the people. JFK attempted this. And when it became clear what he was going to be doing during his second 4 years, well, we've all seen the film. LBJ was a victim of this, because his war on poverty was supposed to take precedent over the war in Vietnam for his second term. But the generals and what have you, the generals in that apparatus, decided, we only really wanted you here to kickstart this war, to hell with everything else. Progressing, Ronald Reagan was a creation of this apparatus, and mistakenly, and I think it was Mae Brussel who first alerted me to this, but the whole Ronald Reagan being shot seemed to be a suggestion that, or it seems to be a message to him that you are not the president of the United States. You are replaceable. The people behind you who made you, on the other hand, they are not replaceable. So we can get rid of you. Yeah, people will mourn and what have you, but George W. Bush will be quick to step in for you. He will be quick to just say, you know something? Well, Reagan's dead. I'm stepping over his body. Let's go. George W. Bush was a man of the apparatus. Bill Clinton, gonna shock you all, he was a man of the apparatus at first. Bill Clinton's wife helped him get into office. She wanted him in the White House. I don't know if he wanted to be in the White House, but that second term with Monica Lewinsky and all this, this is most conspiracists, they do not like to take on the extracurricular activity. They just like to go one way or another and say either Bill Clinton was totally good or he was totally bad. Monica Lewinsky only makes sense when you factor in the fact that Bill Clinton was trying to do things that the apparatus didn't like. And it was only when he was beaten down, and I do not make excuses for the things that this man did. But some of the most egregious things he did after he was under attack. Although the early crime bill and what have you, and all of that that went on there, that, well, that's a different story. Yeah, he did that because he was part of the apparatus. When he got elected the second time, he thought it was his turn to do what, the agenda that he wanted to do, and he found out, no, he was still owned. And that was the reason why he put the bomb into the financial deal, which he struck with the Congress in, I think it was 97, 96, 97. That would help pay down the debt. Yes, he took it out on the backs of poor people. This is not debatable. He did that. But he also made it possible for the United States to completely rid itself of its debt by 2008. And it was when the media exposed this, and when the wealthy people who had financed Bill Clinton realized this and what it would mean, it would essentially mean the end of capitalism in America, because capitalism is built on debt. It would mean that Bill Clinton would have actually ended the ability for the Fed, for the banks, the governing board of the Fed. He would have ended its ability to control the country. And when they figured this out, and they figured out that Al Gore was going to not only continue that policy, but it was likely then he was going to, because Al Gore, who was the original conservative as part of that team, was becoming not only more progressive, but he was thinking more outside of the box. And when they figured that he was not only going to not reverse those gains by Bill Clinton and reverse those terms, they said, we got to get him out of here. So first, they made him choose a very, very conservative running mate, Joseph Lieberman. Very, very conservative running mate. And then when they determined that even that wasn't going to be enough to keep him in line, the coup was green-lighted. Now the coup, it wasn't just enough to take Al Gore out of the White House, because people were pissed over that creation of that presidency. They were pissed. So what did the apparatus have to do? I am not 100% certain if 9/11 was green-lighted before the election or after the election. I personally like to say it was green-lighted before the election. And yes, by green-lighted, I do mean that this was something that was planned by this apparatus and carried out by this apparatus. It is not hard to believe they stage these things all over the world. What makes you think they would not stage them here? But it wasn't enough to get Al Gore out of the office. They needed something to divert that anger into a cause which would benefit them. Now, most people analyzing this, they do not understand the depth of this. They point to, I can't even remember the report name, the New American Century. They point to that report, and that's how far they go. That's how far they go. Michael Rupert, rest in peace, he actually pointed to a lot more than just that. But they point to that. What people have to realize and what they fail to realize is the mood that was in the country. Poll after poll after poll after poll said a couple of things at the start of the millennium. The country was not heading right, it was heading left. The new generation, which was coming of age, and I mean those people who were turning 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, all the way up to 25, these people had a communitarian, commonality type mindset, and they believed, by the way, by no fault of the media, because the media had been promoting the exact opposite of this, that the rich should pay higher taxes, that the government should work for the betterment of society, and that the people should have more power in the say of the government. Now, I've laid a lot of this out before. I've done it in scattered methods. I've talked about this prior. But I need you all to understand this, because it is so very, very important to where we're at today. Every poll showed that the country was heading left. And if you look at, and it's hard to actually, I'm amazed with, I'm technically not amazed because the internet was in its infancy, and I think a lot of this stuff, ironically, has just been scrubbed. But I'm amazed at just the lack of information from the year 2000 that is actually available online. But if you look at right-wing candidates that might have even mimicked Donald Trump, there was a black guy who actually ran, and I cannot recall his name. He went on later to work for MSNBC, which was a complete mistake. They ended up getting rid of him quickly. But these people were laughed out of the room. They had no standing. This is why Bush had to run on the whole nonsense of compassionate conservatism. Because the country was saying, Reaganism does not work. Reagan economics does not work. We understand this. It's time to get rid of it. Again, you look at Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan came in sounding like a New Deal Republican. A New Deal Republican. This is where the country was headed. And people were pissed enough at Bush for stealing the presidency that he was going to be a one-term president. There was nothing that would save him. Nothing. The only thing that the apparatus determined would save him was war. And you could not convince the country to go to war without an enemy and a threat so great that the the lives of every person would be changed. And hence 9/11 happened. And the apparatus then moved to its agenda to keep Bush in office, to put the United States into war. The war was a means of making sure Bush got in for the second term. The United States never had a plan for Iraq. The apparatus had a, it seems, I've heard numerous Middle East, quote, analysts speak about it. It seems the apparatus had one single strategy. Destroy the Middle East. Destroy the Middle East. Seems that's what they wanted. But then, as things begin to definitely appear as they were getting worse, the apparatus had, of course, John Kerry running for president, which John Kerry has no personality whatsoever. He's a stoic figure, but he is not any sort of charismatic person altogether. He was not meant to win the 2004 election. But they needed somebody who could captivate the country. Now, it's funny, I don't actually recall Hillary Clinton running. Speaking at the 2004 Democratic Convention. I don't recall her doing that. But they inserted this young man named Barack Obama. And in doing so, they set up something that I don't believe even they realized the power of it. They set it up so Hillary could run in 2008, but many people were calling for Hillary to run in 2004. That's when she should have ran. But Hillary did not want to go against the establishment. She's an apparatus a member too. So they ran, I believe they ran Barack Obama in 2008, not as a serious candidate. They ran him to be the runner-up to Hillary Clinton. They ran him as the runner-up so that then they could run him years later. But there was a snafu. The goal was, my belief, was to allow the economy to crater in 2008 because, as I've said so many times before, and I'll say it again, I was listening to Jesse Jackson's Keep Hope Alive, and I wish I had the old audio. He was talking about the housing crisis at the end of 2005, but it was only devastating black homes then. In 2007, it started devastating white homes. So the goal was to put Hillary Clinton into office and to push austerity. If you look at what Hillary was talking about in her campaigns in 2008, in 2007 even, Hillary Clinton was basically running as, one, the anti-Bush, but her speeches and her comments were almost conservative light. And so they had put Barack Obama in there as a he was supposed to be Bernie Sanders. That's my belief. Barack Obama was supposed to be Bernie Sanders. He was supposed to get the crowd ginned up and then pull them towards Hillary. But it was clear, because John Edwards was really the real threat to Hillary Clinton, it was clear that in order to make Barack Obama viable, he had to be on the same playing field as John Edwards. Because John Edwards, don't forget, they gave the presidency to or the presidential nomination to John Kerry because he was an establishment man. But people were more enthusiastic about he later became the Democratic chair. I can't remember his name. I can see his face. But they were also enthusiastic about John Edwards. And many people saw John Edwards as the next JFK. In order to defeat John Edwards, and you can actually go back. In 2012, I produced a four-part series on the election, and the last part dealt with the assassination of John Edwards and Elliot Spitzer. A lot of people looked at Edwards as the next JFK. And Edwards, who was a legitimate leftist candidate, scared the apparatus. He didn't need their money. And he was a litigator, so he knew how to battle them. So Barack Obama was introduced to pull the energy away from him. And I'm sorry that I didn't have better political clarity than back then, because I would have seen this. I fell into that trap. And Barack Obama was able to do it. He was able to do it by sounding like John Edwards, but not actually holding the bona fides that he did. The bona fide credentials that he did. And during that election, a problem emerged. A problem emerged. Remember that first primary? Barack Obama was number one. Okay, so the establishment kind of won. But John Edwards was number two. Oh, no. Oh, no. If John Edwards is number two, we can look back at the history of the primaries and see that the number two candidate in that first primary, what is it, Iowa, often outperforms. And I remember this was on, I think it was MSNBC. They were talking about how in traditional, in other elections, the number two candidate outperforms often the third and the first in New Hampshire. What did this mean then? If John Edwards walked into New Hampshire and beat both of the establishment candidates, one, Hillary Clinton would have been almost certainly done. And two, that would have put the wind at John Edwards' back, and they had to stop that. And they had to stop that. And so they began pushing on both of their candidates to outflank Edwards. They began pushing both of their candidates to outflank Edwards. And in doing this, they developed a bigger problem. Barack Obama was not White House ready. However, people, and this, by the way, was the first time the internet was really put into this whole election mix. People were beyond excited about him. They had that, and I'll use this phrase because it demonstrates what people were saying. But they weren't saying it. It was like, he's a magic Negro. He can make it all better. Uncle Tom will make it all better. But so they had this issue. And they were stuck. They couldn't take their feet off of the Obama pedal because there was too much wind at his back. But they couldn't abandon Hillary Clinton because she was really the person who they wanted. So then there was the turmoil. There is that turmoil. And most of what you saw during 2008 was the apparatus fighting itself. And what ultimately came of all of that was, of course, Barack Obama. But then it was the determination of the apparatus that Hillary Clinton would run in 2016. She would not oppose Obama in 2012, split the party. She would come up in 2016. And then what needs to happen will happen. You need to understand, ladies and gentlemen, the goal was always to impose austerity on this country. And that was Hillary Clinton's main task. She was to play Margaret Thatcher. And if you don't know who that is, it's time you get accustomed. Go and get the book Shock Doctrine. Particularly pay attention to the parts of the book. I think it's called Green Zones and Red Zones. But where she says that the world's going to become an globe of green zones and zones where not to go. This was always the plan. Now, mind you, I want you to really pay attention. I want you thinking. Remember what I said about Bill Clinton's original plan to pay down the debt. What year did I say the debt would have been paid down? And by the way, this information comes from an actual White House memo which I found. 2008 was the year that was to happen. What happened in 2008 instead? With record deficits brought about by George W. Bush, what happened? The economy crashed. And I was one of the segments that I included in 2016.01 X22 report. He laid out the job numbers, which suggests that the economy is doing much worse. And I think it was in 215.03, I included a report that he did on the interest rates causing a economic crash. Ironically, in 2008, or maybe the end of 2007, interest rates were raised again. This is not something that's talked about. But it's something that we need to keep in mind. We are seeing now that the apparatus is actually setting up Hillary Clinton to win. If you look at, honestly, look at both fields of presidential candidates, there is not an actual contender in there outside of Hillary Clinton. And especially if you look at the Democrats. The Democrats have nobody. There's no youth. There's not, think about it, no youth, at least not making it up on the stage. There's not a black person. There's not a Hispanic. There's nobody. In 8 years, you're telling me the entire Democratic Party went gray? It's to make Hillary Clinton stand out. And even they don't expect Bernie Sanders to win. He's too old. Too old. Now, with all of that said, of course, you're still sitting and waiting and wondering, well, wait a minute, when are you going to get to this idea of calling, of people saying the Obama administration, the Bush administration, and not saying that? Well, as I said in the beginning, there's an apparatus that exists, which transcends all administrations. It is amazing to me. People were willing to admit during George W. Bush's tenure that he was nothing but a talking head, that Karl Rove, excuse me, not Karl Rove, but Dick Cheney held the real power. Now, it's funny, I was talking to a friend of mine who's actually from Texas, and he said to me something that I did not know. The Texas governing system, is set up to actually strip the governor of a lot of power. The actual power does not rest in the governor, but in the lieutenant governor. He lived in Texas, and he lived in Texas for a long time, and he's a very smart person, so when he tells me stuff, I tend to take it to heart. If this is indeed true, then the reality of Dick Cheney being in control makes more sense. The reality of Dick Cheney being in control makes more sense. Notice, which I find this amazing, notice nobody says that anybody is in control of Barack Obama. Nobody says that Barack Obama is being controlled by Joe Biden, even though Joe Biden is a more senior member of the government than Barack Obama. It would make more sense that Joe Biden is calling the shots more so than Barack Obama, that Barack Obama is a figurehead. It would make more sense. But we need to believe that Barack Obama, because he was, quote, elected by the people, that he is in control, when the fact of the matter is Barack Obama is not in control. Barack Obama is as much as a figurehead as George W. Bush was a figurehead. How can a first-term senator with no experience in governing be considered by the people this man with a tremendous amount of power? Explain that to me. Explain it to me. Joe Biden has been in Washington for, what, 30 years? He knows more about how to get things done. He was actually, and I found this interesting, he was a very prolific legislator. He was able to get things done. So even though people like to look at him as stumbling and bumbling and an idiot, I say they do that at their own disservice. Yes. I've said it before. I believe George W. Bush played stupid. I believe he played stupid. I believe he played stupid and allowed himself to come off as stupid in order to hide the fact, not that he was in power, but to divert attention from the person who was actually making the decisions and the person who was knowingly screwing up the country for his own gains and purposes. In this case, it's the exact reverse. I remember Jessica Simpson, you know, when she had her own little show there. People used to call her stupid and what have you. And then there was this write-up. This is back when I used to peruse all this stuff. But then there was this write-up in one of the magazines, one of the teenage magazines, where they said, yeah, everyone calls Jessica Simpson a dummy, but she is possibly one of the richest dummies in the world. Let's look at what she's worth, one. And then two, let's go back and look at the history of her in school and see how dumb she was. A's and A pluses and extracurricular achievements was in her background. She was a genius in school. Now, of course, many people say, oh, well, you could be a genius in school and dumb outside of school. Yes, you could be. Or you can be so smart that you could play dumb in order to make money or to fool the public. Remember that old saying, I'd prefer to keep my mouth shut and be thought a fool than to open it and remove all doubt? Some of the most brilliant actors are also the most intelligent. Joe Biden, I believe, is one of those people. I believe he's one of those people who fools everybody into believing he is stupid and he's bumbling, but in reality, he's a master chessman. Now, before you go off and you say, oh, well, you're just trying to cover for this black man, think about this. Why was it so easily perceptible and believable by people that George W. Bush was a figurehead when he had been the governor of one of the largest states in the Union, and yet these same people who would readily say Bush was a figurehead and Cheney held the real power, these same people would say Barack Obama holds total power. And Joe Biden, who had been in Congress, the Senate, for 3 decades, holds and wields none. How could you say that, especially knowing the history of Barack Obama, where he has purely, he's been a careerist, where all of his moves have been to benefit him, and it has shown not individual decisiveness, but it has been, his career has been one of opportunism, of capitalizing on opportunities, and following instructions and orders. Stop looking at what is going on and saying it is a Obama mistake. The Pentagon, which is part of this incredible apparatus, these are their doings. But we don't want to say that because we are fearful that if we say that, then we have to confront the fact that the government is not for and by and of the people. Snowden revealed to everybody, which is funny how you don't hear about him anymore. You don't even hear about him anymore. And yet the United States is prepping what some believe is a conflagration with Russia. And yet nobody mentions that Edward Snowden is in Russia. But Snowden revealed to you all that the government was spying on you. He revealed it to you. And what you do with that information? Nothing. You did absolutely nothing with it. You didn't dissect it. You didn't say, what does it mean? You read about it. You got up in arms about it. And you forgot about it. What Snowden revealed to you was what many people who have been marginalized by the media and by the system have been telling you for a long time. There is this pernicious apparatus in Washington which cares only for one thing, and that is global dominance and suppression of the people. I found online this warning by, oh my God, I just had his name, George Orwell. And I'm actually, I'll include it in another broadcast, but Orwell, who I have read, I cannot confirm this, but who was a person who was in and out of the corridors of power, meaning he traversed with people of that world. He made a startling prediction where he said the world would essentially be made to be emotionless and to be drone-like. Wasn't his exact words, but that is my interpretation. And indeed, if you read 1984, which, by the way, Animal Farm may actually be a better book, but if you read 1984, you understand that that's what he was getting at. And if you look around, you could actually see this happening. These individuals have a agenda to make this happen, it seems. We have to therefore realize that everything we discover is contextualized by this end goal. Many people do not want to contextualize what they're finding. And when they do, they only want to contextualize it in the sense of economic collapse, fascism, martial law. But nobody wants to say, what does all of this lead to? And I think the reason for this is because then you start dealing both with physical and metaphysical constructs and the ends to both of those when they meet. I cannot say for certain where it's totally going to end, how it's totally going to end up. But I can tell you this, the people are broken. The people are broken. And not only are they broken, but they are so disintegrated, personally disintegrated, not communally, because communally, man, ew, this nation has been communally fragmented and disintegrated for a long time, but they are so personally disintegrated that their perception of the world is mired in fragmentalities. It's mired in fragmentalities. Not a word, by the way, fragmentalities, but it is two words put together, frag and mentalities. Or fragment and mentalities. It is what comes about from the constant hollowing out of the human ambitious soul or the human meaningful soul. This apparatus has hollowed out even those who thought they were hollow. So those who contended and said, I have a hollow soul, a hollow being, and did things to prove how hollow they were, like killing and maiming and burning and destroying. This apparatus has even done to them what they thought was impossible. They have hollowed them out and turned them into drones against interests which they did not even know they had. Those who thought they were egotistical and were powerful in their egotism have been checkmated by those who are purely egotistical and are evil, evil, hollow in their egotism. I have watched people who have sworn that they were the most bloodthirsty, egomaniacal, egotistical people on the planet come up against apparatus created egotism and fade and fade away, shrink away, because they actually had morals which they never realized they had. There were boundaries which they could not cross, which the apparatus said did not exist. This is something that is appearing in the military also. I was told by another friend who is former military, who actually rose to a pretty nice rank in the military, he was telling me, and this was later confirmed by something that I heard, I want to say it was on Gary Knoll's show. He was telling me that the military was having a recruiting problem, that they were paying more and more to recruit less and less. And I thought this was just hilarious. I said, we have soldiers all over the world. What are you talking about? And he said, yeah, but we're not pulling in that many people. And this was then confirmed by this interview, where it was revealed that not only was the military not able to recruit people at the levels which it needed, not wanted, but needed. But people were not reenlisting. Some of this was due to the privatization of the military. So people were going and working for mercenary groups and making more money than they would if they went to the military. But a lot of it had to do with individuals who thought they were soldier material, realizing what the military was actually doing was dishonest, disingenuous, and a lie. So these individuals, and these are some hardy, hardy people, who if you looked in their eyes, you would say, that's a stone-cold killer. But even they found that they had boundaries which they wouldn't cross. This is not to say you trust them, but that's what's going on. This apparatus is a cancer. It's a cancer, and that's what capitalism is it's a cancer. Its parts are cancerous. And its job is not only to extract as much as it could from each community, from each colony. It invades and it sets up, because a colony is that which is established for not only the usurpation of the people and the resources there, but the usury by those who established the colony. But not only is it a cancer in that way, but it is a cancer to the people too. One of the metaphysical constructs of this entire apparatus is the media. And the media, when you read the publications, and particularly the early ones, when they said, we want the hearts and minds of the people, you got to understand, those are spiritual concepts. Why the heart and mind? Why the heart and mind? The heart is where the soul sits. But the mind is where the higher intelligence is. We need to start wanting to face this. This apparatus has metastasized to a level where killing everybody is preferable to healing itself into dying out. So don't call this thing the Obama administration, the Bush administration. This is an apparatus. This is an apparatus. And if we are not willing to admit this, then we are going to keep falling for the lies which it gives us. For instance, when it determines that the presidency is no longer useful and it seeks to get rid of the presidency, we are going to fall for the reasoning which it gives. As we have fallen for the hollowing out of the government, the replacement of the government by corporations. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm not talking figuratively here. I'm talking literally. You have whole governmental departments, federal departments, which have been outsourced to private industry. This is fascism. And this is the true goal of the apparatus. It wants the entire government reintegrated into the corporate structure. And I say reintegrated into the corporate structure because the colonial administrative structures of the early colonies, of the 13 colonies, these were actually corporations. Ladies and gentlemen, hear me again when I say this to you. These were corporations. The colonies, which we call colonies, were actually corporations. When you look at what initiated the colonies, they were writs. They were writs written by the queen and king establishing colonial corporations. It is from these early beginnings that the idea of incorporatization on this continent came into existence. The colonies were corporations and the people were mere possessions of the corporations and those who held the titles and the deeds and the stock to those corporations. Therefore, when every person was born into the colonial structure, they became a member of the livestock. Mind you, the livestock. Livestock of the corporation and of the colony, of the owners of both, which of course they were one and the same. The birth certificate, and I give credit to the person who alerted me of this a couple of years ago. There was a video which I have somewhere. The birth certificate is essentially a demarcation of a note of birth detailing the head of a cattle, of a piece of cattle. of those who actually own the stocks to the communities, the corporations which you live in. This is why a community can file bankruptcy, because it's a corporation. The apparatus has turned malignant. And we must face this. It's not Obama. It's not Bush. In my last episode, actually in the previous episode, I spoke about monarchy, oligarchy, polyarchy. We got to get away from the terms like this. When we say monarchy, we must realize what it is. It's one rule. It's one law. And this apparatus takes that law and puts it into operation. I want to thank you all for joining me. I hope you found this addendum helpful. I hope you found it insightful. If you have questions, comments, concerns, write to me at the email above. I also have classwarbattlefield@live email. Look forward to hearing from you all. Peace and love to you. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone.